Hey, agency owners, it's time for a new episode of the Agency Blueprint, the number one podcast for agency owners looking to build systems to simplify and gain reliable profit growth, while also reducing stress and getting their personal life back. I'm your host, Robert Patton, international bestselling author, agency scale partner, and founder of Creative Agency Success. If you enjoy this episode, do me a favor and hit that subscribe button to make sure that you never miss an episode and help keep the show at the top of the charts so it can be found by more agency owners like you. And now for the show. Masood Hassan is the first generation immigrant from Bangladesh. His family struggled financially after immigrating to the US, so he learned how to code at 12 years old so he could build websites for extra income. His parents wanted a doctor in the family, and as the good son he is, he became one. During med school, he launched a startup called Sensei Life, and 3 years later, sold it for $10 million. He then finished his residency, but decided to quit medicine. He then started Q and did Y Combinator S20 and raised $1.6 million in funding to build the operating system for agencies, the system he wished he had when he was building websites when he was 12 years old. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Robert.
Well, to start off with, this is the second of a two-part episode that we have, where the first we were talking about how to go about really understanding what client churn items we currently have. And in this episode, we wanted to dive into client feedback and the issues that agencies end up having. And just as a little bit of a reminder for those of you that didn't listen to the last episode, in the preparation for these episodes, I was just so incredibly, my nerd brain was just piqued by the data of loads of things that I had been assuming were happening. But with Q, we now have the data to back some of these pieces. And so I wanted to dive into these client feedback stuff. So to start off with, the first question, I suppose, is let's start off with kind of the base data of what you're collecting for client feedback and how exactly, what is the basis of the information that we are going to be talking about today? And then we can talk about the different client feedback stuff.
Yeah, sure. So when it comes to client feedback, we are analyzing close to over 2 million comments that has happened in the platform. So this is the agency commenting on certain files or requests that the client sent, and the client's doing the same thing right back at them. It's over 4,000 different clients that has worked with various agencies. Some of the agencies are solopreneur making only $40,000, $50,000 a year, and some are making upwards of $15 million plus per year with a size team of 40 plus. And altogether, I believe it's around 240,000 plus client comments and 1.9 million feedback comments. So feedback comments are comments left on files such as PDFs, images, videos, websites, that sort of nature.
So it sounds like we have a fairly reasonable data set.
Yeah. And so we took all of that data set, compiled it, made it very organizable and neat, and fed it into our AI. And we were able to ask specific questions on trends that the AI is able to notice based on various different. So we took all of that data and fed it into an AI and was able to ask questions on trends that the AI can notice. Some of the questions that we would ask, like, what's causing client churn? What caused the client to give negative feedback and cause the project to get derailed and extended more than it should have gotten extended? How fast do clients give feedback since delivering a file to the client? So these are some of the questions that we ask the AI, and the AI will analyze all of the comments, the files, the delivery dates, upload dates, update dates, and just give us that kind of data back for us to learn. And then we use that data to help our users optimize the product.
Very cool. So I guess this is a pretty broad-oriented question to start off with, and we can create kind of different channels of thinking here. But what does the data then suggest around both client satisfaction when it correlates to feedback, and what are the kind of feedback activity levels that you've been able to see from the data?
So when it comes to, so one thing I will say that it really depends on the business it is. So most of the customers that we have in Q are creative services. So we're thinking of Figma design, Webflow design, video services, that sort of nature.
Also the listeners of the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So the nature of the feedback is usually just giving feedback on what they want changed. Typically, the workflow is the client will submit a request for with a brief and describing everything that they need done. And then the team will go ahead and assign it to their teammates to finish out. Then they send that work over to the PM, and the PM will review it once and then send it back and get another iteration back and send that iteration to the client for feedback. This is what the best team does. The not so good teams, they just send it straight to the client without any kind of like approval in between by a PM or anyone in the middle. They just have their designer just, oh, you finished it? Let's just upload it to the client and ask you for feedback. And then the client just goes directly into the file and just starts marking things, circling things, whatever they need on the feedback. And we noticed videos has the most feedback out of everything else that we've seen.
I mean, I think that that's interesting, right? Because there's the context component of it. And it's like, how do you take the information that the client needs to understand of what feedback is necessary at this phase? What stage in the project are we actually at? I mean, I have a couple of pet peeves when I watch design presentations and asking for feedback of the client. And one of the biggest ones is, well, what do you think? There was no precursor to it. And let's face it, if the client had the ability to be able to creative direct the work that is being produced, they wouldn't really need the agency in the first place. They don't spend their lives, their days doing creative direction. And so the idea that just asking them for feedback and expecting a reasonable amount of feedback is very difficult for them. And so you're actually just causing them anxiety. And if they do, they're going to end up providing you with feedback that in a lot of instances isn't particularly useful, which I suppose takes me to the next question that I wanted to ask in kind of two sides of it. One of the issues that many agencies run into in creative projects is the time frame that it takes to get feedback. And one of the assumptions that I have around the length of time that it takes to get this feedback is because the client doesn't know how. They haven't been trained how, so it causes them to avoid. We all, as humans, avoid doing the things that don't feel nice to us. And so if they don't know how, they don't. And so do you see that commonality? Is that something that you see happening in the comments? And then two, what have you seen is a way to get the actual feedback? Because that can really derail a project waiting 3 weeks to a month for feedback from a client.
One thing we definitely noticed from our data was the companies who sets a deadline tends to get feedback faster than the companies that do not set deadline. And the length of that deadline is also matters quite a bit. Certain agencies will set a deadline of 2 weeks, and majority of the time, the client always ends up giving the review in the last couple of days at most. So you're just giving them like a lot of room to just delay. The high quality agencies that gets feedback done really, really quickly are ones that set a deadline of 3 to 7 days at most. It sort of creates this effect where the client knows that deadline is approaching, so they procrastinate less. The more time you give them, the longer it's going to take. So I believe there's an old saying that if you think it's going to take a month or a week, you're correct in both instances. So if you want projects to stay on track, if you want to get done faster, just set a shorter deadline. Trust me, your clients have the time to do it. They just wait way too long to do
procrastinate.
It.
Procrastinate. Yep.
Yeah, they always procrastinate. So you got to find a way to remedy that. And two, the way you deliver the work matters quite a bit. You can't just send like a video to your client and be like, hey, what do you think? There needs to be some context around what you're sending over. So we always recommend adding a short summary. Nothing too long. Don't make it a book. A short summary that explains why you did what you did. What is a creative direction you decided to choose? Why did you choose that creative direction? And also ask them specific questions such as, what do you think about this X style that we've done? Also, what do you think about the color scheme that we've done? And let me know if you request any other specific changes. And if you have an example, that would be very helpful, because oftentimes clients will draw a circle on the video and say, hey, I don't like this color. It's somewhat helpful, but it doesn't really get the picture across on what we need change. We just know you don't like it, but we don't know why you don't like it. So that's where asking for an example helps quite a bit.
I have a follow-up question to that, I suppose, in the distinction between smaller businesses as a client. So do you have a reasonable amount of data set on the enterprise level clients in that 24 hours to or 3 days to a week in timeline? I typically suggest to clients 3 days. However, in my experience with enterprise, they tend to need more time because there's more legal reviews
stakeholders
and exactly. Yeah. Do you tend to see that? And is there a distinction in that timeline for
enterprise? SMBs typically will give you responses a lot faster if you set a short timeline. Enterprise will take longer if you make it difficult. And when I say you make it difficult, meaning that you're sending the review link to one specific stakeholder, which is, let's say, your client. But the client has, like, let's say, 5 or 6 other teammates from PM, designer, you know, usability expert, et cetera. Mm-hmm. They all need to review it. Now, most agencies that I've noticed, what they will do is make this big mistake of sending it only to the client, and they have no contact or no way mm-hmm. to send it to the other 4 or 5 other stakeholders. And so mm-hmm. they're relying on this single person to send it. And this single person ends up be procrastinating and derailing the project and making it take a lot longer. Yeah. That's why on Q, we have an onboarding checklist built in. And so we always tell them, invite your teammates. Just invite your teammates. As soon as there's something for review, they will all get a notification. So they all will be able to review it in a really quickly manner. And it's not one person that's responsible for knowing something is ready for review.
What do you see in, now that created another question in my mind, what do you see in the types of kind of too many cooks in the kitchen, if you will, right? Because there's so many instances that I've seen where work then ends up having so many people with feedback and they're counter or they're directly in competition with each other, where one stakeholder says one thing and another stakeholder says another thing. And so many clients of mine will have one predominant decider within the project so that, you know, here's the feedback that you're going to prioritize over everyone else's. What do you see, and do you have any data that says or disputes that information?
Yeah. So we usually see this kind of dispute issue when the main client, the one you're in contact with, is sending it separately through email or Slack. And so all of these people, they start giving you feedback and it starts conflicting with each other. And the real way to fix this is making sure everyone's feedback is in one place.
So if someone can all see it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that all the clients can be able to see the feedback. So if you're sending a Figma link for commenting, don't send multiple. Don't send just images. Just make sure they can all see the comments from everyone else. And that should usually, what we know is that keeps everyone aligned in what should be changed or not changed. And they usually start arguing with each other inside of those nested comments. And they usually will figure out what they end up doing.
Final decision.
By the end of the comments, yeah. And so usually you don't want to go in and say like, hey, you want to do this and not that. You kind of want to let your stakeholder decide like, hey, who's in charge here? Can you just decide which one you're going to plan on doing?
Interesting. So one of the things that we had started a line of thinking around that I wanted to explore a little bit more is the types of feedback framework that is being placed into it. So you said, ask them for examples, give them a summary, not to write a book. So you don't want me to write it because I'm not known for my brevity. How to go about What other insights do you have on what guidance to give the client when asking for the feedback on the work?
I mean, based on the AI, we haven't exactly asked it what kind of information is going to be really beneficial to ask the client when asking for feedback. But we have seen a lot of back and forth commenting between the client and the team of just submitting feedback. I would say the most common issue is like the client just gives no examples and doesn't go deeper into what they want done, like, or at least changed wise. So that's the biggest issue that we see. And two, the onboarding is probably the most important part when you get a new client. You kind of need to figure out what the brand is for the brand, the voice and the vision of
Agreed.
Of the company. Because if you don't have this, you're going to end up delivering really design that doesn't fit what they had envisioned. Keep in mind, a lot of companies have design systems, and you kind of, even if you don't like their design system, you kind of have to just go by their design system.
You have to follow it, yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm not a big fan of material design, but if a company hires us for material design, we're going to do a material design and try to make it as good as possible. And you won't know that until you have that call with them, because they're under the assumption that you already know the system design, or it's just a standard, or you took a look at their website and their product and went about that way. So having that onboarding call and making sure that you document all of that. And there's a lot of AI tools that does this for you already on Zoom. Document all of that. Keep it very handy for your team to access that as soon as it's ready to deliver work. That's what we notice keeps the team aligned in delivering high quality product.
Interesting. So I suppose I have a question of a piece of feedback that happens quite a lot. It's both frustrating to the designing team as well as just frustrating on how exactly you go about responding to this or even managing this type of feedback, where it's like, I don't like this, or this doesn't look good, or I don't know how to even provide feedback. So like, what does an agency do at this point? Like, what has been the way to get them to get into a better place?
you know, kind of reminds me of a story back in the day. We hired a video editor for a product demo, and we gave a feedback saying that we would like some things changed. And I remember that video editor responding back saying, "I'm sorry, but do you have a background in design? Because I do." So that's something you don't want to say back to them ever.
I'm right, you're wrong.
Yeah. Look, a lot of designers, a lot of creatives do this because a lot of us design, we believe we're artists. So when we finish something, we just deliver it and say, it's done. Why do you want things changed? It's finished. It's beautiful. I created this. But you know, that's not how the design world really works.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get that kind of feedback, you kind of want to respond in the sense of, thank you for your honesty. Can you share some specific changes that you envision or possibly examples that you like? And if they completely disagree with you, you can add an additional verbiage that says, we chose this specific design because of X, Y, and Z. At the end of the day, it's still up to your decision, but as an expert in design, this is why we chose it. Let me know how you want to proceed. And if you still want this to be changed, let me know.
I feel so validated and seen right now in what you're talking about, because I have a lot of conversation with especially agencies that were initially founded by the designer or by the creative, in this mindset that I see within the design team that they are artists. And I'm sorry, and you've heard me say this on the podcast before, and I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news. You're an artist in your own work, but when you're doing work for a client, you are a brush of the thing that they need. And the design work is a tool to achieve a business outcome. And as much as you personally like the work that was being produced, it is not your artwork, and you need to take your own personal ego out, which is incredibly important. And yes, definitely do not be combative with the client, because that's a great way to lose the client.
Yeah, we see it. That's the funny part. We see this happening in the comments. So much that we're kind of being forced to add AI tools where we have to automatically tell the person leaving that, the PM that's leaving that comment, saying like, hey, this does not match the brand voice your agency wants to install.
And love it.
Because then, like in the background, we see the private comments from the owner of the agency going like, hey, what the hell? You can't say this kind of stuff to them. You know, just sugarcoat it. You got to sugarcoat all of this.
Yeah. Be nice. Come on. You're the client facing.
You are an artist, but they hired you.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. What I'm curious, in so many agencies, you know, think about the number of revisions or rounds of revisions that are going to be necessary in a project. And I'm curious as to what you see in the different types of work. And you said that there's the vast majority of the types of comments and revisions happen in video. But what about the distinction of, you know, web work or UI work or different types of design work that are being produced by your clients? Of how many rounds of revisions do you see happening with each different deliverable?
Yeah. So the average is between 2 to 4. Across the board. Videos is typically 4 to 7 revisions, depending on the agency. And web design is between 1 to 3 rounds of revisions. That's what we've noticed. Like I said, the context of when you deliver highly determines how many revisions are going to be needing. Whether you do an onboarding call or not, that also is going to be impactful to how many revisions you need. Now, we've looked at the data and we noticed that everyone that has an onboarding call when they first get the client, not every request, but when they first get the client, ends up having less revisions over time. They also know which designer to put on a task, because some designers are very good with 3D modeling or spline or Webflow or just Figma alone or product design or web pages. So they put specific people depending on what the needs are, and that helps lower the revision needs a lot.
What you should be doing as an agency, I understand largely that sometimes you're going a bit outside of your normal area and resourcing conflicts and stuff like that, but agencies should generally be doing that. I'm glad that you have suggested that. But also, if you are in a video agency and you just heard plan for 7, if you end up having less, great, you made more money. And if you're doing other work, the 2 to 4, plan for 4. And if you end up at 2, good for you. The other piece that I wanted to ask, not knowing and having actual access to the data set of, is there anything else kind of shocking or something I didn't ask about in the data points that you've looked at that we should talk about?
Let's see. I would say overload of client work is one of the higher reasons for churn. We've noticed a recent trend where people were taking on way too many clients that they can handle. And the reason why they do that is because, you know, more revenue in, right?
Sure.
Soon as they lose one of their freelancers or one of their employees, it just goes straight downhill. And so that's, I would say, 30% of churn of clients is probably because of this. A big chunk is because they finished the work and they don't really need a subscription model, or they got work that they weren't happy with. But taking on more work than you can deliver is a really big problem. So I actually always recommend to combat this problem is just don't take on more clients. Instead, just increase your prices. When you increase your prices, you'll eventually level off where you still get leads, but you're not overloading yourself by a bunch of people. And think about scaling at some point. Think about hiring the freelancers full time that you've been hiring. This way, they'll be free all the time to pick up some of the work that your clients are giving you.
So you've just validated, I would say, so much of what I talk about quite often. Raise your fees if you have a lot of work coming in. That's a great time to raise your fees.
Yeah.
You should have some aspect of a resource contractor or something that you are used to working with for overflow, so that if you are at a place where you are overworked, that you have an overflow mechanism, and that you need some aspect of redundancy amongst your team. So don't plan for what is the industry norm at the 80-85% utilization of your team. It's that if you're that because of a lot of work that you have at the moment, that's fine for short periods of time. But this industry is rife with burnout, and so many people are completely turned off to the agency industry because of the demands of the industry. Plan for your lower utilization. That way you don't actually burn out your team, because you don't have anything to sell if you don't have a team. Mm-hmm. So protect them, take care of them.
Yeah. Regarding team, honestly, what we noticed, the ones that are making millions a year, we've noticed that majority of them have full-time staff.
Yeah.
Majority of them do not hire freelancers. Or if they do, they hire maybe less than 15-20% of their workspace. And it's very specific people, like people who are specialized in spline 3D modeling or specializing in motion design. Those are the people, because you know you're not going to use that skill set in every single project, so it doesn't make sense hiring them full time. But we also did see that people would hire a freelancer for a month, maybe 2-3 months, and then we see the contract going out to them for full time. So it's like a good way to test to see who you should hire.
You also have to be careful with that, with laws that are coming into place in the US as well, around these contractor pieces, with new federal laws that are going out. Yeah. But I do tend to agree with what you're saying as well. You know, this is such an interesting thing. I feel like I'm going to be constantly reaching out to you with validation of my opinions and things that I see, to just see if you have any data points to tell me whether I'm crazy or not.
Please do.
Well, Masoud, if listeners wanting to learn a bit more about Q and learn a bit more about you, how can they get in touch?
Yeah, just go to our website, useq.com. That where you can learn about our company and about us. We also have live chat at the bottom right corner. So in case you want to message me asking us some questions, trust us, the same thing Robert wants to ask us, all these questions. We get these questions every single day from our customers. The ones that are just starting off, you know, they're kind of our passion at the end of the day. We love our enterprise customers, but the small guys who are just starting off, we love them. Very often I'll see someone signing up on the platform, because we're free until you get a client. So we see someone signing up in, let's say, February, and they create their account, they set up all their services, they set up the workflow, and then 2-3 months later, we see them coming back with a client. And it feels so great when they do that. And we feel like we're part of their journey. And they're asking us these questions, like, hey, my client gave me this. Do you have any recommendation how other agencies handle this kind of situation? I'm like, yeah, we do.
It's really cool. I definitely will be reaching out, and you guys should as well. We'll make sure to put links in the show notes as well, so you guys have an easy mechanism. Make sure to check them out. Thank you so much for joining today, Ben.
Awesome. Thanks, Robert.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening in today. With all of the shifts in the industry, it is easy to feel overwhelmed or unsure of your next move. So I'm not here to try to sell you anything. I just want to give back and guide you through the uncertainty. Whether you're navigating new trends or just need some clarity, we're here to listen and offer advice. Head to creativeagencysuccess.com/chat to book a free 15-minute chat with an agency mentor who can provide you with a fresh perspective. Let's figure out the best steps for your agency's growth together.